Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us today on Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm very excited to have a dear friend and very reputable fashion expert, stylist, and social media maven, Calla McGuire, who's in the studio with us today. Thank you so much for being here, Calla.
Thank you so much for having me, Jen. I'm thrilled to be on as one of your first few guests.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. Really, I am. Well, let me start off by telling you a little bit about Calla so you know what her history and background is. Calla has over 13 years a professional experience and countless clients that she's worked with. Calla's known for her passion for style and fashion and for having, she actually attended the Fashion Institute for Design and Merchandising and has actually worked around the world in the U.S. as well as Europe. She's dressed people and styled people for the Oscars, Primetime Emmys, Daytime Emmys, Esquire International, all sorts of different things, including Amsterdam Fashion Week. And she's worked with everyone from top celebrities such as Eva Longoria, Jessica Parr, different authors, as well as even Ben Affleck. So one of the things Calla's gotten into since we have known one another, she actually used to style me all the time for any sort of speaking engagements, television appearances that I had, is she's actually grown her business and is now not just about your personal brand with how you physically come across, which is a little bit about what we're going to talk about today, but she's also on Instagram for business and online business promotion experts. In fact, she teaches entrepreneurs, individuals, business executives, and marketing professionals how to harness the power of Instagram and its different communities. Calla, I think that how many followers are you up to now on Instagram?
I think it's 46,400, I want to say.
Oh my gosh. So Calla is definitely someone that you should follow or be following on Instagram. What is your Instagram username, by the way?
It's my first and last name. So it's Kallah McGuire, Maguire.
Awesome. Yeah, I highly recommend following Calla. She has awesome fashion sense, and you can really get a sense just by following her on her different social media outlets, especially Instagram, and see how to brand yourself, which is what we're going to talk about today. I love how Calla really combines what it looks like to kind of combine your personal style with your professional branding, because whether or not we like to acknowledge it, employers are out there. They're Googling you, whether you're trying to start your own business, whether you're out there in the market for a job. We've had numerous people throughout the years lose job offers because of different things on their social media profiles. So, Calla, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of how you started off as a stylist and then grew into an Instagram and social media maven?
It's been a fun journey. So I started back when I was in college styling people. People here, you're in school for fashion design, which is what I was studying at the time. And they are like, oh, I'm going, you know, to my back to school, this or that, you know, or my aunt's cousin's friend has this important thing coming up that they need to look great for. And so I actually started taking personal styling clients while I was still in school. And when I got out of school, I went through being, you know, a buyer for a large store up in Berkeley. I did men's, I did women's. I decided that wasn't quite my fit. And then I got into doing styling for photo shoots. And I did that for a number of years exclusively, which was wonderful. I lived in Europe for a time. I shot a bunch over there. I came back to the U.S. and worked with a bunch of celebrities here in Los Angeles. And I kind of hit this turning point where I realized, even though it was great to have the creative side of being able to do a beautiful photo shoot and create something either for a brand or, you know, whether it was a personal brand or a clothing brand, I wanted a little bit more than that. And my personal clients that I had on the side, it was very rewarding to work with them because, you know, they could be authors, speakers, ton of like lawyers, C-level executives, and making a difference in their life on a personal level was totally different than doing something that was just kind of purely for the art or the marketing of it. And so I actually decided to change my business over from focusing on fashion photo shoots and being a wardrobe stylist in that sense into being a personal stylist and branding people for their lives and their careers.
That's awesome.
And that was probably 7 or 8 years ago at this point. And I love it. And I still do photo shoots here and there and I have great fun with it. And I'm lucky that I get to work with brands. Like I just did something with Faraday Future which a bunch of people from Tesla went and opened.
Oh, how cool. I think I heard about that. It was all the rage at, what was it, CES?
Yes. Because they say, even though they're making cars, they're not a car company, they're a technology company. And they have this incredible car that they're launching with. They decided to launch with their race car, which is not necessarily for everybody.
Yeah.
But they do
just on the weekends, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, when you want to get around town in LA.
If only the 405 and the 101 and everything would just open up miraculously for fun driving.
Instead of just sitting there looking pretty.
Yeah, exactly.
But they have a lot of other consumer cars that they're coming out with. But they brought me in November of last year to design a special custom race suit, shoes, gloves, everything for their launch that they were doing in January. And I went in with a design partner and we worked together hand in hand to create something really beautiful and unique for them. And even though their company was all about the technology of the car, having that amazing look for the model that was going to stand next to the car that was so unique, they got on the front page of like the LA Times and all these different publications just based on that, because they had this amazing look. And it was something for people to talk about and be like, well, what is that car over there? What are they doing?
That is brilliant. So I have a question to kind of like take this over and transition to a little bit of the job hunting. So like you said, it's like you can wind up on the cover of a magazine from a business standpoint if you have the right look and the right, you know, pizzazz that's going on with whatever it is that's happening for that brand. How do you determine your own brand? So you merged from the fashion, the styling side of things, but also helping, I know you helped me tremendously over the years to develop and cultivate my own brand and my own style, which again, I don't know what I would have done without you. I remember you going through my closet when we first became friends years ago, and I'm just mortified by what I had in there.
I'm like trying not to laugh too hard.
Oh no, are you remembering my tweed, what was it, turquoise suit? Or I think you approved of that one.
No, what I mostly remember is you literally climbing over the piles of clothes on your floor because you had nothing but wire hangers, which are not only awful for your clothes, but break. So a lot of them had broken and your clothes had fallen on the floor.
No.
And you were literally on your hands and knees climbing over them to get to the stuff that was still hanging.
Oh my God, I think I had wiped that from my memory. So is that where you start? Do you start just by putting everything on the floor and going through? I know there's that great book out right now where it tells you to kind of pick up each article of clothing and see what sparks joy for you. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, there were a lot of things, you know, that kind of are like, what do you love? If you pick it up, do you feel passionate about it? There have been a lot of books and, you know, different people that have come out and talked about that over the years. And it's true to a degree. I always say to my clients, if it's not doing you any favors, you shouldn't own it.
Okay.
Every single thing that you own, even if it's, you know, your kind of casual stuff, if it's not doing you a favor, you shouldn't own it. So even if it's simple, a t-shirt, you know, your sandals that you're going out in, it should be stylish to some degree. It should be comfortable. It should elevate you and make you feel better and good, even if you're just kind of throwing it on. And one of the things that I always start with is a reverse engineering of the wardrobe. So you get a style profile and it asks you all these questions about what's your lifestyle, how much do you travel, what do you do on a daily basis, what's your work, how do you currently feel that you are perceived? Is this the way you want to be perceived? If not, how would you like to be perceived? You know, what are your top goals in working together? And basically, like, what do you want your wardrobe to do for you? How do you want to be viewed, seen? What do you want people to expect of you when they can see you from across the room at an event? They have no idea who you are. How do you want them to feel about you?
Oh, that is really brilliant. And so you kind of start, if I'm hearing you correctly, with the being. Like, who do you want to be seen as in the world? How do you want to occur for other people? And how would somebody then go about and check in to see if they're coming across that way? Is it, do they go out into the world and ask people to see if it's in line? Or is it all something that you can tell just by looking at somebody's wardrobe?
Most people have a sense of how they're perceived. You know, for better or worse.
Okay.
So enough. Most people, you know, will say that they, like women usually say, they want to be perceived as confident, approachable, and attractive, but in a professional way. You know, so not in a sort of sexy manner.
Yeah,
but,
the sexy selfie doesn't do anybody any favors in business.
Oh, not in business. No, it does you the exact opposite.
I always tell people on LinkedIn, that is the kiss of death. There are only two things that will hurt you on LinkedIn, and that is the sexy selfie, which I see women and men of all ages doing.
I know,
the sexy selfie. Or the scary scowl. I have so many people I see where it goes back to your personal brand, too, of how you want to be perceived. If you're not smiling, smiling, or at least your eyes don't light up. It doesn't have to be a toothy smile, but at least you want to look approachable in your yes. main picture, whether it's your profile picture on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on Facebook. People are going to Google that and see it.
Oh, yeah. Everybody gets Googled these days. I mean, anything that's out there on you that can be found under your name, your phone number, or an address that's associated with your resume, it's all going to come up.
Well, even Twitter, it's funny because I remember a job seeker years ago, and you don't even realize, it depends on how Google juicy your name is, where mm-hmm. if you're utilizing your first and last name in any way, shape, or form, your political agendas could come up. There was a candidate that happened 2 years ago where a client was ready to hire her, and they found a lot of political stuff on there that was not in line with the company's brand. And so her personal brand hurt her. Now, one would argue that in that particular circumstance, it probably wouldn't have been the right cultural fit for her mm-hmm. because if somebody has strong political views one way or another, maybe it might not mesh well with that company.
Yeah.
But if I recall, one of my favorite stories about you that I always share when I'm talking and teaching a social media class was, remember when you were tweeting, you were starting off with Twitter when Twitter was the hot thing back in 2009. Didn't you get featured in a book, if I recall, by tweeting
yes.
back and forth? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
I love that story. I always share it in my social media classes.
It's very true. It was, or is, Crave LA.
Okay.
And Crave, they're just national, so it's across the U.S., and it'll be like Crave Los Angeles, Crave Denver, Crave New York. And it's a focus on female-owned and operated businesses that are the best of in that area. So they go to the creme de la creme of the businesses and services offered in that area, and they talk to them about having them featured in the book. And I don't remember exactly how I found them on Twitter, but I know that's where we connected. And we literally exchanged maybe like 3 or 4. It was not very many at all. And they were like, we would love to feature you. You know, can we come out? Can we interview you? Can we do the whole thing? And I was like, yes, absolutely. And it became this whole thing because they have events around it. I mean, I don't do it so much anymore, but for a few years, there were a lot of events that were going on around the book and support and press and all of that. And it was great. It's like there's so many things that come from social media. It's incredible when I really start to sit down and talk to new clients that I'm teaching about how to do their business and their branding online. I share some of the things that I've received from, you know, my relationships, and they're always just blown away. And they're like, I never even would have thought that would have even occurred to me.
Like, can you give us an example of one?
Yeah, so let's see. One of the most recent ones is, so I ride motorcycles.
I know, you just got back from Australia, right?
Yes, and Australia in part came about because of Instagram. So
really?
On Instagram, I'm connected to a lot of people in the motorcycle community, and that's here in Los Angeles as well as nationally and internationally. And there's a girl on there who's now my good friend, Jacinta Syracuse, and she's under Moto Doll. And we had connected on Instagram and just were kind of going back and forth and chatting with each other. And then she came here last summer to visit, not to visit me specifically, but to come to LA and meet all the people that she had met on Instagram, basically.
Wow.
And she came here, she did a bunch of shoots, she rode with people that like did amazing stuff, and she and I met and we hung out and we got on really well, and we decided that we wanted to do something that was cross-branding for both of us. And so I went, just I guess it was a month ago at this point, month and a half ago, over to Australia, and I was there for 16 days, and we did a 10-day ride, just the two of us on our motorcycles, and we raised money for UNICEF, and
that's amazing.
It was a great experience. It was wonderful. It was, you know, kind of, everybody's like, oh, it's a once in a lifetime thing. I'm like, life is full of once in a lifetime things. It's just one of them.
Exactly. It's all about perspective, but that would have never happened had we not
met on Instagram. And
that's amazing.
I have had so many incredible things come through my Instagram account, relationships, you know, for personally, just friends that I've made, and then also a ton of stuff for my business.
That's awesome. What I love about discussing this with you is that you bring so many different facets to the table into this discussion, because on the one hand, you're a fashion expert, you know, you've been to design school, you're also good at personal branding, and then you have this business side to you too. And it all, I really truly feel though, that it all kind of ties together, and that a lot of people underestimate the power of, if they're trying to do their own business on the side or what they could be doing, it's all about what I consider to be strategic alliances. You could say theoretically that what you and Jacinta created was a strategic alliance.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's so critical in business or in job hunting. It's all about who you know. But what's great about Twitter when I'm teaching social media classes is I explain to people that Twitter is for the people who you want to connect with, but you have no other way to connect with them. You could connect with celebrities, you connected with the people from Crave. You know, LinkedIn is more for business associates and Facebook is more for friends. So how would you kind of quantify what Instagram is meant for?
I think Instagram being the hottest platform right now, it's still the largest, hottest one, even though there's, you know, Snapchat and, I always forget his name, Periscope.
Oh, yeah, Periscope, right?
Which, you know, they're both growing, and those are kind of like the ones that are budding at the moment. But the one that's the biggest is Instagram, because it has, out of the hot ones, it has the most action on it, and it's got the widest breadth of followers and age ranges and whatnot, and it's still growing. So I see it still continuing to be the number one for a few years, even though the other ones are still something smart to look at for your brand and see if they're a good fit and get started on that earlier rather than later, because early adopters always have an easier time building their audience.
So true. I know I was an early adopter of LinkedIn, and I think I'm up to 8,000 plus connections, and I'm sure lots of other people have 20,000 or 30,000. But it's like anything, it's all about who you know and who you're connected with, and also trying to keep it reciprocal. I think where some people hurt themselves on all different platforms of social media is if you talk at your audience without interacting with them. Yes. Isn't that... Oh,
I talk about that all the time.
So tell
in
me
all
your
my
thoughts.
Trainings. I say social media is very literal. It's social media, as in you should be having a conversation on there the exact same way that you would as if someone were standing right in front of you. You know, because if people are... If your account is so huge that you literally have hundreds and hundreds of comments on every single post, you're not realistically going to be able to respond to each individual person, but you should still be going through and responding to the people that you see commenting all the time, that you know that you have some relationship with, that you want to get to know better, or that have taken the time to write, you know, like an actual response to whatever it is that you put up. But even now, my comments, like, I think the most I've ever received are somewhere around 270 comments.
Wow, for one picture?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I answer every single one.
What?
Every single
How do you have the time?
I have a system.
So call Kala for her system.
You know, but having that conversation is really important, because you put something out there, and especially my brand is a personal brand. I am my brand. And so if I'm talking to them and they speak back and then I ignore them, what does that say?
Ah, because it's a direct reflection of how you treat others is a direct reflection of who you are and how your brand kind of is seen by the world, right?
Yeah, and it creates a very, very different relationship than if you go to like a big celebrity account that either very randomly or almost never responds to people. And you'll see like people have their own conversations in the comments, you know, and they'll go back and forth with their friends and they'll tag people and whatnot. But that's a very different relationship than an account like mine where people that I'm connected to, if I, like, I knock on wood, I'm going to knock on wood right now, I have never, ever been trolled, ever.
Wow.
Not even one time. And if I ever put up something and I misquote something or I put the wrong name, I immediately get private messages from people being like, oh, Kala, you know, like, I love your feed and I just wanted to tell you, like, it's not this, it's actually this, and I didn't want anybody to be mean to you. And they're so kind and thoughtful, and having that relationship and only bringing them products and opportunities and things that I think that they would like, and it's not about the brand or just trying to make money off of it. It's like, is this something that I enjoy, that I think is great, that I want to share with my audience? It's a very different relationship than just like putting it out there. So when you meet people in person, which I do all the time, I've even literally been walking down the street and had people pull up in their car and be like, Kala? And I said, yes.
Do I know you?
It's at the point now that anybody that comes up to me and looks like they might know me, I'm just like, hello.
Hi, you. How are you doing?
No, I don't pretend to know them if I don't, but I've gotten used to it, you know, enough that I'm like, hi, you know, oh, do we know each other on Instagram? Oh, great. You know, da da da. What's your handle? You know, and sometimes I might know them by their handle. So it's a very different relationship than if you don't speak back to them and if you don't have some kind of care for your community, because I never say that they're your followers. I always say community, because that's how I view them and that's how I treat them. And I'm quite protective of them. I get offers from a lot of brands like, oh, you know, can we send you this or send you that, or, you know, do this kind of promotion. And any good brand is going to attract and repel. It's not always going to attract. And part of repelling is being able to say no to those people that just don't fit the brand, because it's not about just the money. Like, sure, that's part of it, but it has to fit my community and something that I believe in, and I'm going to try it out ahead of time, make sure I like it and think it's really cool, and then I'll share it, you know, but it has to be from a place of authenticity.
That is a really interesting point that you raised, because I'm also looking at how that kind of translates to if you're job hunting. You know, if your brand is out there, you have to be very careful of who you affiliate yourself with, because just like you said, a good brand can attract or it can repel. The same is true of who your kind of circle is. And if, for example, like this has happened to me in the recruiting world, if somebody refers a candidate, but that person themselves has a bad reputation, they've showed up late, they've lied on their resume, that person's credibility has gone out the window because of the fact that they've been referred by somebody who wasn't authentic or misrepresented something. So it's interesting how across the board that you have to be conscious and conscientious of who you're affiliating yourselves with, who you're interacting with. Do you ever unfollow people if you notice that what they're about isn't part of what's in line with your community?
At this point, I've done a lot of different strategies with my account as far as who I'm following and who I'm connecting with. It changes all the time because every idea I have about how that might work, I try on my own personal account first before I teach it or use it on any of my clients' accounts. So at this point, I'm just following people that I want to follow and that I want to connect with specifically. I think I'm following maybe 2,400 people, which is not that much for me. I mean, I usually didn't like to be below 3,000 because it's not enough people to interact with, but I'm finding that it's really nice to have it at a little bit of a slower pace as far as like who I can interact with and how much I can see, especially with the latest change in Instagram, you know, and them giving us the post that supposedly we're going to like more towards the top. Still not entirely sure what I think of that. I think there are pros and cons to that. I don't think it's all bad, but it's kind of a bummer because it makes me think that they're going to continue to just go towards the Facebook model because, of course, Facebook owns Instagram. So
yeah,
we'll see. But at this point, I still love it. It's still an incredible tool. It's still a great place to do business, to meet people, all of that.
So what would you say the top three or four tips, the couple of tips that you would give to somebody who's looking to really brand themselves? And again, branding yourself doesn't just mean that you're a business owner or an entrepreneur or a speaker. Again, keeping in mind that anything that Google pulls up is part of your brand, whether it's good or bad or that image. Oh my gosh, I think there's some images if you Google me from years ago that pull up on Google Images and you're like, how do I take that image down? They're just embarrassing or bad pictures and you like put it on Google Plus one day and it still shows up to haunt you.
I have the interview that I did. I can't remember what it was called. It was something that you put on. It was over in Culver City.
Okay.
And they were
Viral publicity.
That's right, viral publicity.
I forgot about viral publicity.
One, if not two, interviews of me from that, and they're fine, but they're so old and they're like fuzzy, and I'm just like, oh my god, these are still here.
I forgot about viral publicity. That's right, because you have all that stuff. And by the way, for anybody listening out there, it is so important to Google yourself.
Yes.
That's the first way that you start to ascertain what your brand says about you. Is it's a good thing and a bad thing if you pull up on page one. I remember when I first started owning my own company and opening my consulting company, my name is Jennifer Hill. And when you Google Jennifer Hill, I kid you not, a pop-up from Canada. And so I think her pictures pull up first. And thank God now that I've done like a lot of work and so forth, I pull up on page one. But for some people, if you have a unique name, like your name, Callum McGuire, you're very lucky in some ways because whatever is affiliated with you is going to pull up right away. And so you really have to be cognizant, like, oh my gosh, this is a crazy story. I had an Uber driver the other day who I loved and adored, had a great conversation with him, and went to connect with him on and Google him right after we got out of the car. He gave me his card. And so I Googled him. It pulled up there was an arrest warrant out for him in a different place. So part of me is like, do I call the police? What do I do? But this is the thing about Google. I hope for this guy's sake, A, that he got the warrant for his arrest handled, and B, that he realizes if you Google his name, that's the second thing that pulls up.
That's crazy.
But you never know. I mean, things like that can pull up. So you have to worry about how much Google juice your name has and leverage it. It's a good thing if your name has a lot of Google juice as long as you're directing the flow of what people are seeing, right?
Yeah. You have to also sign out of your own personal profile because Google remembers the things that you like.
Really?
Yeah, so you have to log out and then Google yourself. And I haven't done that actually for a while, but
You're telling me I'm not really number one on Google? Is that
I don't know. You should have other people Google you from their phones and their computers.
Okay. Well, for anybody listening out there, please Google me and tell me if it's up on page one of Google. I had no idea that happened. That's pretty funny.
But yeah, the last time I checked, the first three pages were all me because my name is unique and I have a lot of stuff out there on media and I've done a lot of SEO over the years to make sure that my stuff is what comes up. But It's important. And I think people don't realize how much it matters, you know, in getting a job, in connecting with people. Even if you're more of an entrepreneur and doing your own thing, people that want to connect with you and maybe do business with you, you know, or have some kind of collaboration, usually they're going to Google you as well. So even if you're thinking, oh, I'm not going into a corporate setting, that may come into play for sponsorship or, you know, something else down the line that you don't know you're going to do yet. And so you don't want to have those pictures of you in Vegas, in the, you know,
with a martini fountain, or God knows what,
in the fountain with strippers at 2 a.m. holding a glass.
You've never
of
had
wine.
That, right? Because I don't think there's any way. Is there a way to delete old images? I'd be curious to know about that. I'm sure you might have to talk to an IT.
It is possible, but I have not looked into it in detail. There are companies that you can hire to bury stuff. I mean, that's how big celebrities, when something comes out, it's like you hear about it and you kind of know it happened, but then you tell someone about it 2 years later and you go to Google it and nothing at all comes up.
Oh.
Like there are firms that will bury it. You can pay them to do it, but
The average Joe, yeah, because the most common thing we see on the job hunting front, we see a lot of people with just indecent pictures. There was once a candidate who had almost naked pictures of her that pulled up on Google. And if people find this out, it's really a gray area, too, on whether or not people should be Googling you and whether or not it's allowed or whether or not legislation passes to support or to deny it. It's still out there.
And people are going to do it whether or not they're supposed to.
I know. And it can really hurt you if you don't know what's out there or if you're not managing your brand. So what would you say that the couple steps that people should take to make sure that their brand is managed online?
Definitely Google yourself for sure. Use different spellings of your name.
Oh.
Because not everybody, like my last name, obviously people don't get my first name right spelling wise, but even my last name, because it's all one word. It's all M-A-G-U-I-R-E. Most people want to do M-C, capital G-U-I-R-E, or M-C-Q-U-I-R-E, McQuire. Get that quite often. So you have to Google the different spellings of your name and see how you come up, what people have written about you, if there's anything out there. Also have your friends and other people Google you from their laptops.
Clearly.
Or phones.
I didn't know that.
Check it out. See what comes up. Being smart about it, just in general, you know, if you are going to Vegas with your friends to have a crazy, you know, weekend, ask them not to post anything, you know, nuts on social media.
Yeah.
Because that'll come up later. I mean, I've had a number of clients that have said, oh, I'm going to, you know, da-da, and I'm like, don't post it.
Yeah,
don't
just
post it.
It's like drunk dialing. Just turn your phone off and don't take it with you.
Exactly. It's like, or take the pictures and keep them, you know, personally for yourself and your friends, but don't post them and ask your friends not to post them and not to tag you in them, because that will all come up. Even if you're like, oh, well, I didn't post them. If your friends post it and tag you, it's the same thing.
Well, I have a funny question for you. I remember I used to teach a lot more social media classes myself years ago, and then I've kind of veered away and still do a lot with LinkedIn. One of the things that I always found very helpful when it came to interacting, as you said, with your community, is for people looking to build their brand, I always found the 30-30-30 rule to be very helpful. And what that was is 30% of your time posting things that are personal about you. That way your community feels related to you.
That they actually know you.
Yeah, not just like a brand. 30% of your time posting things related to your brand. It could be, hey, I'm doing this podcast, or I have this upcoming photo shoot. And then the last 30% of your time is sharing other experts in the field information.
Yeah.
So in my case, I would share other things that people are writing in human resources and recruitment, etc. And then the last 10%, like you and I had touched on earlier, is commenting and interacting. So if you apply that 30-30-30, people feel related to you. They feel like you're an expert. They know what you're up to. And then they also have the interactive component. How do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah. I use that rule all the time. It's
okay.
One of my favorite things.
I thought I made it up years ago. I'm sure I probably learned it from somebody.
And people have, like, you know, different ways of dividing it and different things that they, but basically that's it. You know, you want to make sure that you're always talking to, there's always a conversation back and forth with your community of people. You want to make sure that you're providing value and you want to let them get to know you. And that's not that they need to know everything about you ever, but they should know you as a person, because that's who they're going to relate to and want to work with and want to connect with, is you as an individual, because there are any number of people that will do whatever it is that you do, and they buy you.
Wow.
Time and time again. So that's super duper important.
Yeah, that's very helpful. And what would you say, taking it full circle back to some of the fashion related stuff, if I'm a job seeker and or a business professional and I'm trying to go to a business meeting, not a networking event, but somewhere where I just want to be, you know, come across as professional and articulate, what are a couple key items that you would recommend somebody have in their wardrobe? Or how do you, I remember one of the things you were super helpful with me, and I think you held up colors to my face. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea how important it is. Like, certain colors you can wear can not only make you feel less attractive, but actually physically be less attractive depending on your skin tone. Do you have any recommendations for books on that sort of thing, or what a couple key items to have in your wardrobe might be for men or women?
I mean, there's a whole thing of you're a summer, you're a fall, you're a winter, and that's true to a degree for the most part. It's a pretty easy thing. There are a number of programs out there that you can get that, and it's fairly straightforward, so you can just Google, you know, what season am I?
Oh, really? So people could just Google that?
Yeah, you can Google that, and you can figure it out. But what I like to do is just like what I was doing with you, is hold the color up to your face, mm-hmm. and you can pretty much immediately see, does it make you look tired? Does it make you look haggard? Does it make you look sickly? You know?
Not a good thing. At all, by the way, when you're going to a business meeting or interview.
But you can see that pretty quickly because, you know, the way light works, light bounces off of, you know, whatever it is that we're wearing and reflects back, you know, onto our face and things like that. It's very scientific.
Wait, say that again.
Not all woo-woo.
No, that's very interesting because I remember you told me that years ago, but say that again. So light...
Light reflects off of anything that you're wearing, reflects off of our skin, or reflects off of our clothing, and it reflects onto whatever's around us. And what's around us? Our face and our skin. And so the actual color that you're wearing is on your skin, reflecting back, and it can make you look really tired and haggard. Like you have yellow undertones in your skin. So if you were to wear like a puce or a yellow or something that was too close to your color, it can make you look sickly. It can like bring out bags under your eyes. And it's not so dramatic that you're going, oh my goodness, it's like I put on a horror mask, you know, but if you hold it up and look, and then you hold up a color that's flattering, you can pretty clearly see like, oh wow, that I look fresh here and I look tired and haggard here.
Wow.
So I like to do that. And then if you have a color that you're really love that just doesn't look good on your skin, there are little cheats of being able to wear it as a belt or wearing it as a shoe where you can't see the skin on your feet, so it would be a closed shoe.
Really?
Being able to wear it in a sock, something like that, where it's not necessarily right next to your skin reflecting off of it, so you can kind of get away with it.
You're an evil genius, Callum McGuire.
But as far as what you're going to wear to an important business meeting, you want to wear something that's going to make you feel comfortable and powerful at the same time. So ladies, don't ever wear shoes that are going to make you feel like you're going to die.
I wore those last weekend in Vegas. It did not end well.
Because sometimes the quote unquote sensible shoes are also uncomfortable. So you might be like, oh, these are really business looking shoes, but you know, I can hardly breathe because my toes are so squished at the front because it's a pointy toe. You always want to be comfortable. Gentlemen as well, you know, like make sure that whatever you're wearing feels comfortable on your body, but is also flattering. It's well tailored. Tailoring is so important. Even let's say if you are at the beginning of whatever it is that you're doing, you can't really afford a proper suit. You can get a suit somewhere like H&M or Zara and just choose it very smartly. You know, get a really a dark color, something that's kind of simpler so that people don't usually notice the quality if you've got like a really kind of simple pattern to it. And then you can get it tailored.
Oh, and how much is it for like an average person? Like say you go and you get a $50 suit or whatever the cost might be for a man or woman at Zara or H&M. How much would the tailoring cost for our listeners if nobody's ever thought of that before?
So you never want to get something that you have to tailor in the shoulders because that's the most expensive thing to have done.
Oh, and good to know.
It's very, very rarely worth it. So you want the shoulders to fit, and as long as the shoulders fit, you can tailor it the waist. So usually you're tailoring at the cuff to make sure that the cuff length is correct, taking it in maybe a little bit at the waist so it's not too boxy, depending on where you get it. If you get it at H&M or Zara, it's probably going to be shorter as far as like where the jacket.
Okay.
The jacket will be shorter, but sometimes they're a little too long, depending on the height of the person, so you might have that taken up. Have the waist taken in the pants, make sure that the cuff is hemmed appropriately so you have the right break. If it's a business skirt, you know, just making sure that everything fits properly and in the waist and whatnot. And just having something that's well tailored, whether you spent $50 on it or, you know, $1,500 on it, makes all the difference in the world. So I would say wear colors that are flattering to you, which you're going to have to figure out on your own unless you hire me.
Callum McGuire or emeraldscarab.com.
You can make sure that your things are tailored, which is super important. Everybody should have a good tailor. I mean, literally everybody.
Do you have any you recommend for our listeners? I know you referred me to somebody in Beverly Hills that repairs shoes that I love. Was it you who referred me to Arturo or was it?
It might have been. He's one of the people that I love. I also use Willie's Shoe Repair. They're fantastic. I use Mariana, who's on 3rd Street for my tailoring. It's just called Mariana's Tailors.
Okay, good to know. This is all very helpful.
She can do anything. She's just fantastic. There's another tailor that's just called Alterations Express, and they will actually travel to your home or office I use them quite often for that because not all tailors will travel to wherever you need them. So you can do a fitting at home, which is really nice. So having it tailored, having the stuff that is flattering as far as color goes, and then making sure that you're comfortable and confident in it. Because you don't want to be comfortable like sweats comfortable.
But I've had job seekers show up on like a Friday, and it's casual Friday, and they've literally been in like their favorite sports jersey and a pair of sweatpants.
Yeah,
and they weren't invited back on Monday. Yeah. So.
So you want to be professional yet comfortable in what you're wearing and something figure flattering.
Interesting. Are there any stores aside from H&M or Zara? I know this is going to sound silly, but I've had our office is at J. Hill Staffing Services, is on Olympic and Purdue, and not too far from where I live on Wilshire and Bundy. Believe it or not, I can't believe I'm about to say these words on the air. Ross. If anybody ever asked me if I ever said that word on the air, I'm going to lie and say it never happened. But there are a lot of job seekers, and it's not everybody has a ton of money.
Yeah.
And so sometimes if somebody comes in very unkempt or disheveled or not wearing something appropriate, I will refer them to that unnamed store, Ross, on Wilshire and Bundy up by my house. Because as far as they go, it's a nice store. It's easy to find stuff, and they do have a lot of suits there for men and women. Are there any other stores aside from Zara, H&M, the unnamed store that you would recommend?
I don't do budget shopping much these days. Most of my clients are C-level executives, and above.
And above.
Meaning they're the owner of it. So most of the people that come to me have a really healthy budget. But just like general rule of thumb, I would do Bloomingdale's, Macy's, Men's here in Los Angeles, in particular at the Beverly Center. You would not believe how many suits they have. I swear,
really?
Half the floor is suits, and they always have the most insane sales. And you can get like a sale on top of a sale on top of a sale. I mean, you can really get an Armani suit, not the same Armani suit that you would buy at their Rodeo store, but like the Collezione or something like that, one of the diffusion brands. But still, really nice suit, looks great. You can get something there. Make sure it fits in your shoulders and have it tailored. You can get a really nice suit that way.
That's really helpful to know. Now, I have a funny question, because years ago when I first started recruiting, I recruited nationwide for a company, and this was before the days of Skype or FaceTime or any of that fun stuff. And I had this particular applicant who sounded professional over the phone, and that's all we had to go off of in those days. So I sent him in to meet with one of my clients, and I'm sure he's going to get that job. I have like this good gut feeling. I get a call as soon as the interview's over from an irate client. Jennifer, this is blah, blah, blah. I'm calling about Jim. You'll never believe what he wore to the interview. I'm like, oh, geez. Okay. I said, I'm so sorry. What did he wear? And I need to check your opinion as a stylist on this. And she said, he wasn't wearing socks with his shoes. Have you ever heard of such a thing? Is that?
Yes, that's a huge trend. It's very European, but it's made its way over here.
So the best part is, so I put the woman on hold, the client, and I'm like, can I just put you on hold for 1 second? So I go and call another line. I'm like, Jim, this is Jennifer Hill. How'd the interview go? Oh, it was fabulous. It was amazing, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, so Jim, I have a question for you. Were you wearing socks with your shoes? And I kid you not, oh my God, honey, they were Gucci shoes. You cannot wear socks with Gucci shoes. So I've always meant to ask you, as my stylist friend, is that a true thing? Are you not allowed to wear socks with Gucci shoes?
Well, that is not a thing. But
okay.
But wearing no socks, or at least no visible socks. Most men have something on inside, a small sock that you can't see.
Oh.
Because it keeps the shoes from getting disgusting.
But aside, now I could see that actually working. Like a friend of mine, I won't use his name on the air, but really amazing guy. He's the only guy I've ever actually met in my life. Probably the one of the most stylish individuals I ever met at a wedding, and he wasn't wearing socks with his shoes. Turned out they were Gucci for the record on that. But would it be appropriate for a guy to wear something like that? Clearly, you need socks for an interview just to keep it streamlined so it's not distracting.
I would say unless you are in a creative field or a fashion field.
Good point.
I wouldn't go that route. And I might even just say play it extra safe, because you would be surprised at how many people have really strong thoughts on socks versus no socks.
Really?
I think it's really kind of over the top, but people get a little heated about it. So I would say if you are really interested in this job, even if you don't normally wear socks to it, play it safe. As they get to know you and love you, you can stop wearing socks. But
test the boundaries a little bit.
I just think you always want to give yourself the best chance. In any situation, no matter what that is, so.
So here's a question for you. So in the example where I met this other gentleman not wearing socks at a wedding, he was by and far the most dapper man dressed at this entire
it's
wedding.
It's usually very stylish men that do the no sock thing, and they're very well put together.
So here's a question. Would that be appropriate, or what is appropriate for a man or a woman at a networking event as opposed to at an interview? Would you recommend any sort of different things to wear or different approaches at a networking event rather than for a professional business meeting or an interview?
For a professional business meeting or interview, I would take it up a notch. You know, wearing something that truly anyone seeing you walk down the street would be like, oh, that person looks very professional, very put together. It's not that you can't have your flair in there somewhere, but it all needs to be professional. You don't have your cleavage sticking out. You don't have a really short skirt on. You don't have hooker heels, you know.
Hooker heels are never appropriate for an interview.
No. And as a man, you want to have a well-fitted suit on, you know, or something that is because different industries have different standards. I think when you're interviewing, it's always good to wear a suit, even if that's probably something you would never wear in the office. Mm. It usually just shows respect to show up wearing a suit. And you can have a casual suit. You can go without a tie. Like, you can do a whole look. But I think it's important to have that. But then when you go to something that's a bit more mix and mingle, you can relax a little bit. So you still want to look professional and put together, but you probably don't have to, like, as a woman, you don't need to make sure that you have, like, a business coat on. You know, you can relax on a few of those rules, in my personal opinion.
Okay. So if you're one of my thoughts, and this is, I would love to get your two cents on this. When I'm teaching people about how to be effective at networking, one of the things I found most helpful is to be the brightest, most interestingly dressed person in the room. Like, I have a pair of blue suede shoes that I love wearing to networking events, because it doesn't matter if I'm in an elevator or at a networking event, both men and women will approach me, and it's much easier to kind of have that icebreaker start the conversation if somebody walks up to you and compliments you on something you're wearing.
Absolutely.
Would you say that's something that you would recommend?
Oh, I do it all the time.
By the way, I know this is not a visual show, but you should definitely Google search Callum McGuire, because just whatever she comes into a room wearing, you're always going to be like, where did you get that? Where can I get that?
I call it the beeline effect, and I do it a lot with my clients. And what I describe it as is dressing the opposite of what you think everyone will be wearing. You know,
really?
So,
okay.
And it's not meaning to be casual. It's meaning more like, usually when you go to a business networking event, you don't see a lot of white.
Really? I never thought of that.
So I often, at a networking function, will dress head to toe in white, like fabulous, tailored, amazing. I walk in and almost always I'm the only person that is not in black. So I will wear all white. I'll wear red in an appropriate way, not in a vampy way, but I will also wear red head to toe, you know, and you don't have to do a head to toe look, but wearing something that is tailored, that has interest, like you said, the blue suede shoes, wearing something that's really beautiful and stands out. Like, for a man, it could be, you know, like a pocket square, or, you know,
I
like
love
just
the pocket square. It's so dapper when a guy wears that.
And a really well tailored suit, and a shirt that has interest, you know, it has like a beautiful unusual pattern to it that's not crazy, but that looks fantastic. Like George Roth Los Angeles.
Is that the one that you turned me on to for my husband? Yeah, there was, I was going to ask you which one that was. Give the name of that brand again, because they have some really cool, interesting shirts.
Oh, you guys should look that. I love them. They're fantastic. So it's spelled without an E on the end of George. So it's G-E-O-R-G, Roth, R-O-T-H. If you just Google that, it'll come up. But the full website is georgerothlosangeles.com. Yeah.
And they have some really interesting shirts, because, of course, I buy all my husband's stuff, and I'm always asking Calla's input because I'm looking for interesting things. I think it's a little bit more challenging for a man than for a woman to kind of come out of the box a little bit wear something fascinating or different.
That's one of the things I love about them. They do men's and women's shirting, and they have branched out a little bit into scarves and some really great dresses. But they're known for their prints, and they have these beautiful, incredible prints. And the whole thing is, you get this beautiful print on this gorgeously made shirt. Their quality is so high, and they have such great attention to detail. It's got all of these little things, you know, like under the collar, there'll be sequins.
And that makes a difference. When you're at an event and you see somebody wearing something like that, that is a conversation starter for a guy.
And it's always tasteful. I know the way I'm describing it, you might not be able to understand how this would be tasteful, but just go and look them up, I promise. And so being able to wear a shirt like that, and they're all very well fitted, which is so important. So, you know, and if you roll the cuff up, it's got a contrasting pattern. It's just, it sets you apart, and you look very chic and very put together as a man or a woman, because they've got it for both, and both can be worn with like a pantsuit or a skirt suit or something like that to kind of take it to the next level and make you stand out.
Yeah, I think that's great. And so for men, some of the things I've noticed, whether we're talking about a man or a woman, it's just that little flare or accessory. Like for mm-hmm. men, sometimes if a man's wearing suspenders or a bow tie, depending on the situation,
yeah.
that can be really memorable. Or like you said, the pocket square, interesting.
Or not wearing a tie. I had one of my clients, he's a like an angel investor, a serial investor. And so he goes to a number of things where everybody there is, you know, pretty wealthy and doing sort of a similar thing. And everybody can afford whatever it is that they want to buy as far as, you know, clothing and whatnot. So just wearing an amazing, well-tailored suit doesn't necessarily make you stand out. So what he decided to do is have a bunch of custom shirts made so that he could unbutton the top two buttons, because normally if you undo the top two, it's a little too far down.
Yeah.
But so we moved the second button up just slightly. So it was in between the first and second spot. So he could unbutton it a little bit, be a little bit more casual, but not weird about it. And then he never wore a tie, which was his thing. But he had beautifully tailored suits, beautifully custom made shirts. You know, he had a great shoe collection. We got a lot of, we decided to go with a lot of browns and grays for his shoes because that kind of made him stand out as well, not to have black shoes. So he always looked very well put together, very elegantly simple, and he always stood out.
And that's the name of the game. I think to tie it all back together, what I really have gotten out of our conversation today is that you want to stand out, be memorable, build your brand, and so that whenever people think of you, whether they're thinking of you after an interview, a business meeting, a networking event, or after checking out your Instagram or any of your other social media profiles, is to have you be memorable in a positive way that's sticky, that has
yes.
people go, ooh, that Calla McGuire or Jennifer Hill or whoever it might be, that it has that sort of sticky quality that people can't quite get you off their mind in a good way.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure, because we're getting close to the end of our time here today, that people know, you know, where to reach you, what you specialize in. I mean, I highly recommend Calla. I've worked with her, you know, for gosh, as long as I've known her, 10 years from ranging from styling to social media. So if you want to give people some information on where they could find out about you, that would be wonderful for our listeners.
So two great places to connect with me are on Instagram, which is under my name, Calla McGuire, which is KallaMaguire. And you can find me on my website as well, which is emeraldscarab.com. So it's EmeraldScarab, S as in Sam, Carab, as in boy, .com. And that's my personal styling and shopping website. And you can reach out to me there for personal styling or for Instagram training, because my InstaNinja.com is on its way up.
InstaNinja.
InstaNinjaTraining.com.
Is that going to be your new website?
Yeah, I'm really excited about
it. That's an awesome name. Talk about a sticky name. InstaNinjaTraining.com.
You start out at a white belt and you work your way up to a black belt.
I love it. That is such a brilliant concept. See, it's perfect for your brand.
It's fun because I've been doing trainings for a while now and they've all been live. So you can sign up for it and it'll be over a weekend, and people, you know, from all around the world literally will come do these trainings, and it's fantastic, have great results. But I wanted something that was easy for people to access any time of the day or night, so it didn't have to be live. And so Instant Ninja Training was born.
Oh, that is amazing. I know. We'll have to get you up and back on the show after Instant Ninja Training. I can't try saying that five times fast. It's up and running. But I'm so happy that Calla's on the show. And for those of you listening, this is Jennifer Hill. I am the founder of J. Hill Staffing Services in West Los Angeles. We service the legal community. If you did want to follow me on Instagram, you can find me at Jen Hill, J as in Jennifer, H as in Harry, C as in Cat, S as in Sam, which is my company, JHCCS. So you can find me at Jen Hill, JHCCS, or J Hill Recruiter on Twitter. Do you still use your Twitter at all, Calla?
It exists, but I don't use it.
So you will not be interacting with Calla on Twitter. Twitter, I found people have kind of moved away from it over the years. A lot of celebrities still use it, and there is still a time and a place for Twitter. I actually did get a radio appearance out of it from after I'd appeared on Conan a couple years ago and was invited via Twitter. But I feel like people don't use it as much as they use LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram and such.
It all depends on the type of industry that you're in and who you want to connect with, and also what you enjoy doing as far as social media. because if you despise doing it, whatever the platform might be, you're never going to do it on a regular basis. So it's better to pick the ones that you're actually excited to talk to people on.
Exactly. Because again, there's so many options. I mean, there's Pinterest and all these different options. So we've barely scraped the surface on a few of these. Yeah. But I do want to let our listeners know that we will be having next week on the show, Sharon O'Donnell, very dear friend of mine, prominent HR manager here in the Los Angeles area, who's worked for companies such as HBO, real estate companies. She's currently working for an animation studio in Hollywood and is going to teach you how to negotiate that raise that you want in this economy. The great news is, because we're up on an upward swing now and we're moving out of a recession and back into an employee versus an employer market, this is a great time to talk about how to get that raise that you want. And the following week after that, Paul Falcon, top renowned best-selling author, has written 8 different books that are best-selling throughout the world on human resources, is going to be coming in and talking about how vets can get back to work. So I know that's going to be an exciting topic. And stay tuned to hear who some of our next upcoming guests will be. Thank you so much, Kala, for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.